Chapter 81. To H.H. Rogers, in New York City. 169 Rudolin Riverside, April 29, 95. Dear Mr. Rogers, your felicitous delightful letter of the 15th arrived 3 days ago, and brought great pleasure into the house. There is one thing that weighs heavily on Mrs. Clemens and me. That is Brosnahan's money. If he is satisfied to have it invested in the Chicago enterprise, well and good. If not, we would like to have the money paid back to him. I will give him as many months to decide in as he pleases. Let him name 6 or 10 or 12, and we will let the money stay where it is in your hands till the time is up. Will Miss Harrison tell him so? I mean, if you approve. I would like him to have a good investment, but would meantime prefer to protect him against loss. At 7:06 yesterday evening, Joan of Arc was burned at the stake. With the long strain gone, I am in a sort of physical collapse today, but it will be gone tomorrow. I judged that this end of the book would be hard work, and it turned out so. I have never done any work before that cost so much thinking and weighing and measuring and planning and cramming, or so much cautious and painstaking execution. For I wanted the whole row and trial in, if it could be gotten in such a way that the reader's interest would not flag. In fact, I wanted the reader's interest to increase. And so I stuck to it with that determination in view, with the result that I have left nothing out but unimportant repetitions. Although it is mere history, history pure and simple, history stripped naked of flowers, embroideries, colorings, exaggerations, invention, the family agree that I have succeeded. It was a perilous thing to try in a tale, but I never believed it a doubtful one, provided I stuck strictly to business, and didn't weaken and give up, or didn't get lazy and skimp the work. The first 2/3 of the book were easy, for I only needed to keep my historical road straight. Therefore I used for reference only one French history and one English one, and shoveled in as much fancy work and invention on both sides of the historical road as I pleased. But on this last third I have constantly used 5 French sources and 5 English ones, and I think no telling historical nugget in any of them has escaped me. Possibly the book may not sell, but that is nothing. It was written for love. There I'm called to see company. The family seldom require this of me, but they know I am not working today. Yours sincerely, S50. Clemens. Brosnahan, of the foregoing letter, was an employee of the New York Herald, superintendent of the press room, who had invested some of his savings in the typesetter. In February, Clemens returned to New York to look after matters connected with his failure, and to close arrangements for a reading dash tour around the world. He was nearly 60 years old, and time had not lessened his loathing for the platform. More than once, however, in earlier years, he had turned to it as a debt payer, and never yet had his burden been so great as now. He concluded arrangements with Major Pond to take him as far as the Pacific coast, and with R.S. Smythe, of Australia, for the rest of the tour. In April we find him once more back in Paris, preparing to bring the family to America. He had returned by way of London, where he had visited Stanley the Explorer, an old friend. To H.H. Rogers, in New York City. 169 Rue de la Riverside, Sunday, April 7/7/95. Dear Mr. Rogers, Stanley is magnificently housed in London, in a grand mansion in the midst of the official world, right off Downing Street and Whitehall. He had an extraordinary assemblage of brains and fame there to meet me, 30 or 40, both sexes, at dinner, and more than 100 came in after dinner. Kept it up till after midnight. There were cabinet ministers, ambassadors, admirals, generals, canons, Oxford professors, novelists, playwrights, poets, and a number of people equipped with rank and brains. I told some yarns and made some speeches. I promised to call on all those people next time I come to London and show them the wife and the daughters. If I were younger and very strong, I would dearly love to spend a season in London, provided I had no work on hand, or no work more exacting than lecturing. I think I will lecture there a month or two when I return from Australia. There were many delightful ladies in that company. One was the wife of His Excellency Admiral Bridge, Commander-in-Chief of the Australian Station, and she said her husband, and was able to throw wide all doors to me in that part of the world, and would be glad to do it, and would yacht me and my party around, and excursion us in his flagship, and make us have a great time, and she said she would write him we were coming, and we would find him ready. I have a letter from her this morning enclosing a letter of introduction to the Admiral. I already know the Admiral commanding in the China Seas, and have promised to look in on him out there. He sleeps with my books under his pillow. Perhaps it is the only way he can sleep. According to Mrs. Clemens' present plans, subject to modification, of course we sail in May, stay 1 day or 2 days in New York, spend June, July, and August in Elmira, and prepare my lectures. Then lecture in San Francisco and thereabouts during September and sail for Australia before the middle of October, and open the show there about the middle of November. We don't take the girls along, it would be too expensive, and they are quite willing to remain behind anyway. Mrs. 100 is feeling so well that she is not going to try the New York doctor till we have gone around the world, and robbed it, and made the finances a little easier. With a power of love to you all, S. 50. Clemens. There would come moments of depression, of course, and a week later he wrote, I am tired to death all the time. To a man of less vitality, less vigor of mind and body, it is easy to believe that under such circumstances this condition would have remained permanent. But perhaps, after all, it was his comic outlook on things in general that was his chief lifesaver. To H. H. Rogers, in New York City. 169 Rue de l'Universite, April 29, 95. Dear Mr. Rogers, I have been hidden an hour or two, reading proof of Joan, and now I think I am a lost child. I can't find anybody on the place. The baggage has all disappeared, including the family. I reckon that in the hurry and bustle of moving to the hotel they forgot me. But it is no matter. It is peacefuller now than I have known it for days and days and days. In these Joan proofs which I have been reading for the September Harper, I find a couple of tip-top platform readings, and I mean to read them on our trip. If the authorship is known by then, and if it isn't, I will reveal it. The fact is, there is more good platform stuff in Joan than in any previous book of mine, by a long sight. Yes, every danged member of the tribe has gone to the hotel and left me lost. I wonder how they can be so careless with property. I have got to try to get there by myself now. All the trunks are going over as luggage. Then I've got to find somebody on the dock who will agree to ship six of them to the Hartford Custom House. If it is difficult, I will dump them into the river. It is very careless of Mrs. Clemens to trust trunks and things to me. Sincerely yours, S. 50. Clemens. By the latter part of May they were at Quarry Farm, and Clemens, laid up there with a carbuncle, was preparing for his long tour. The outlook was not a pleasant one. To Mr. Rogers he wrote, I shan't be able to stand on the platform before we start west. I shan't get a single chance to practice my reading, but will have to appear in Cleveland without the essential preparation. Nothing in this world can save it from being a shabby, poor, disgusting performance. I've got to stand. I can't do it and talk to a house, and how in the nation am I going to sit? Land of Goshen, it's this night week. Pray for me. The opening at Cleveland July 15th appears not to have been much of a success, though from another reason, one that doubtless seemed amusing to him later. To H. H. Rogers, in New York City. Forenoon, Cleveland, July 16, 95. Dear Mr. Rogers, had a roaring success at the Elmira Reformatory Sunday night. But here, last night, I suffered defeat. There were a couple of hundred little boys behind me on the stage, on a lofty tier of benches which made them the most conspicuous objects in the house. And there was nobody to watch them, or keep them quiet. Why, with their scufflings and horseplay and noise, it was just a menagerie. Besides, a concert of amateurs had been smuggled into the program to precede me, and their families and friends, say 10% of the audience, kept encoring them, and they always responded. So it was 9:20 before I got the platform in front of those 600 people who had paid $1 apiece for a chance to go to hell in this fashion. I got started magnificently, but inside of half an hour the scuffling boys had the audience's maddened attention and I saw it was a gone case, so I skipped a third of my program and quit. The newspapers are kind, but between you and me, it was a defeat. There ain't going to be any more concerts at my lectures. I care nothing for this defeat, because it was not my fault. My first half hour showed that I had the house, and I could have kept it if I hadn't been so handicapped. Yours sincerely, S50. Clemens. P.S. Had a satisfactory time at Pedisky. Crammed the house and turned away a crowd. We had $548 in the house, which was $300 more than it had ever had in it before. I believe I don't care to have a talk go off better than that one did. Mark Twain, on this long tour, was accompanied by his wife and his daughter Clara Susie and John Clemens remaining with their aunt at Quarry Farm. The tour was a financial success from the start. By the time they were ready to sail from Vancouver, $5,000 had been remitted to Mr. Rogers against that day of settlement, when the debts of Webster and Company were to be paid. Perhaps it should be stated here that a legal settlement had been arranged on a basis of 50 cents on the dollar, but neither Clemens nor his wife consented to this as final. They would pay in full. They sailed from Vancouver August 23, 1895. About the only letter of this time is an amusing note to Rudyard Kipling, written at the moment of departure. To Rudyard Kipling, in England. August, 1895. Dear Kipling, it is reported that you are about to visit India. This has moved me to journey to that far country in order that I may unload from my conscience a debt long due to you. Years ago you came from India to Elmira to visit me, as you said at the time. It has always been my purpose to return that visit and that great compliment someday. I shall arrive next January and you must be ready. I shall come riding my aya with his tusks adorned with silver bells and ribbons, and escorted by a troop of native howdahs richly clad, and mounted upon a herd of wild bungalows, and you must be on hand with a few bottles of ghee, for I shall be thirsty. Affectionately, S50. Clemens. Clemens, platforming in Australia, was too busy to write letters. Everywhere he was welcomed by great audiences, and everywhere lavishly entertained. He was beset by other carbuncles, but would seem not to have been seriously delayed by them. A letter to his old friend Twitchell carries the story. To Rev. Joes. H. Twitchell, in Hartford. Frank Mueller's Masonic Hotel, Napier, New Zealand, November 29, 95. Dear Joe, your welcome letter of 2 months and 5 days ago has just arrived, and finds me in bed with another carbuncle. It is number 3. Not a serious one this time. I lectured last night without inconvenience, but the doctors thought best to forbid tonight's lecture. My second one kept me in bed a week in Melbourne. We are all glad it is you who is to write the article. It delights us all through. I think it was a good stroke of luck that knocked me on my back here at Napier, instead of some hotel in the center of a noisy city. Here we have the smooth and placidly complaining sea at our door, with nothing between us, and it but 20 yards of shingle and hardly a suggestion of life in that space to mar it or make a noise. Away down here 55 degrees south of the equator, the sea seems to murmur in an unfamiliar tongue, a foreign tongue, tongue bred among the ice fields of the Antarctic, a murmur with a note of melancholy in it proper to the vast unvisited solitudes it has come from. It was very delicious and solacing to wake in the night and find it still pulsing there. I wish you were here, land, but it would be fine. Livy and Claire enjoy this nomadic life pretty well, certainly better than one could have expected they would. They have tough experiences, in the way of food and beds and frantic little ships, but they put up with the worst that befalls with heroic endurance that resembles contentment. No doubt I shall be on the platform next Monday. A week later we shall reach Wellington, talk there 3 nights, then sail back to Australia. We sailed for New Zealand October 30. Day before yesterday was Livy's birthday under world time, and tomorrow will be mine. I shall be 60, no thanks for it. I and the others send worlds and worlds of love to all you dear ones. Mark. The article mentioned in the foregoing letter was one which Twitchell had been engaged by Harper's Magazine to write concerning the home life and characteristics of Mark Twain. By the time the Clemens party had completed their tour of India, a splendid, triumphant tour, too full of work and recreation for letter writing, and had reached South Africa, the article had appeared, a satisfactory one, if we may judge by Mark Twain's next. This letter, however, has a special interest in the account it gives of Mark Twain's visit to the Jameson raiders, then imprisoned at Pretoria. To Rev. Joes. H. Twitchell, in Hartford. Pretoria, South African Republic, the Queen's Birthday, 96. May 24, dear old Joe, Harper for May was given to me yesterday in Johannesburg by an American lady who lives there, and I read your article on me, while coming up in the train with her, and an old friend and fellow Missourian of mine, Mrs. John Hayes Hammond, the handsome and spirited wife of the chief of the four reformers, who lies in prison here under a 15-year Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.